Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Thanks so much for listening today. Asian Americans are often portrayed as super achievers. As a group, they score high on the SATs and attend prestigious colleges in great proportions. But there is an untold dark side to this stereotypical narrative, that they are much more likely than the average American to commit suicide, according to a recent report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Case in point, within 3 months, three students took their own lives at Caltech this year. All three were Asian Americans. To discuss whether cultural pressures for extreme achievement played a role in these suicides and to look at the bigger picture, joining me now are Andrew Lam, editor at New America Media and the author of Perfume Dreams, Reflections on the Vietnamese Diaspora, and Peter Yee, president of the New York Coalition for Asian Mental Health and assistant executive director of behavioral health services at the Hamilton Madison House in Manhattan. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Andrew.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Thank you very much.
And Andrew, within 3 months, these three students took their own lives at Caltech. I think it was one in May, one in June, one in July.
Yes.
All three were Asian American. Is this more than a coincidence?
Well, you know, there has been discussion about cluster suicides, but it does seem that Asian American take a lot of the statistics in terms of being up there in suicide rate, especially in high education. And I wish there were more studies on this, but there are scattered studies, unfortunately. But I definitely think that high tech is definitely a very high pressure cooker education area.
So is what happened at Caltech part of a larger trend at other highly competitive universities? One stat I read at Cornell, there were 21 student suicides between 1996 and 2006. That's a decade, but do we know how many of these students were Asian American or who were studying engineering?
Yeah. Well, yes. At least we know that 13 out of those 21 were Asian Americans, and it's not significant unless you consider that Asians only make up at 14-15% at Cornell student body. So that's more than half the population of the suicide victims.
And Andrew, you've written about your time as an undergraduate at Berkeley in the mid-80s. Was suicide a concern for the Asian American community back then?
Well, it was something that was discussed. When I was at Berkeley in the mid-80s, I remember one student from the unit of my dorm who is Chinese, and he climbed up this bell tower called the Campanile and threatened to jump. And it turned out that he had something like a B in math. And he had come from, you know, top 1% of his school, and he hadn't expected to get a B in his life. And unfortunately for a lot of us scholarship kids, if you will, you are how well you do in school, and it's something of a setback for him. It took them 4 hours to talk him down, and afterwards campus authorities put up bars on the window so that people won't jump.
So Peter Yee, president of the New York Coalition for Asian Mental Health, is this an issue that you're consciously dealing with in your practices here?
Yes. In fact, we are right now having actively in a campaign for suicide prevention awareness for Asian elderly women, which is starting actually like this month.
Did you say for Asian elderly women?
Yes. That's one of the highest risk group in the whole country. The suicide rate is very high for that group. But speaking of younger people, yes, there was a string of suicide at NYU a couple of years ago of Asian students also. They clustered around like about a one-year period. I think there were several. That phenomenon is quite common among Asian students. There's basically several types of Asian students. One is the national Asian student who come to this country to study. They encounter probably the most difficult stress level because they have to achieve certain grade points for the country to pay for them to study here. And they've been picked by among thousands of people from their country, China or Taiwan, to come to this country to get higher education. So success is not an option. It's mandatory. And because of the family tradition. If you fail, you don't fail yourself. You fail your whole family and your whole community. That goes back to 2,500 years to the Confucius cultural influence over the whole continent of respect, family tie, and so on and so forth. So a lot of Western students, if they fail, that's bad. But when an Asian student fails, it brings shame to the whole family and the whole community. It's a heavy burden.
And Asian Americans or anyone else, you're welcome to call in on this. Is this a trend and a risk that you're aware of in your own family, in your own community? Is it something that you feel you're responding to in any way? Anyone else may call as well, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Andrew Lam, editor at New America Media and author of Perfume Dreams, Reflections of the Vietnamese Diaspora, and Peter Yee, president of the New York Coalition for Asian Mental Health and assistant executive director of behavioral health services at Hamilton Madison House in Manhattan, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Peter, tell me more about the suicides among elderly Asian American women. They would seem to be demographically almost opposite from these young, very educated men who we're talking about, probably much less educated and certainly at a different, with different roles in life.
Right. In my experience, the Asian women, elderly women, most of them are immigrants. So when they were young, growing up in China or Korea or Japan, Vietnam, their social contract was different. That when you get old in Asia, you live with your extended family, and you're kind of like the matriarch of the family. You have prestige, you have grandchildren, children around you. It's a very joyous time. In America, as you know, very few multiple generation households. You know, it's very seldom that the grandmom lives with the son and daughter and their grandchildren. I mean, it's not expected because of the Western ideal of independence.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the family in the East Coast, the children they got jobs, they move out of the neighborhood, and the elderly Asian women stay behind probably in their apartment or houses they've been living for like 30, 40 years, and the whole identity has been eroded. I mean, the social contract's not there anymore, and they feel very left without sense of purpose.
Kind of a combination of feeling abandoned and feeling themselves as a burden, yes?
Yes, and especially if they get older, the health fails them. They feel like they're a burden to their family. And Dr. Irene Chung did a study a couple years ago for interviewing survivors of suicide attempts of Asian descent. And most of the elderly women, common theme is that I don't want to be a burden to my family. That's a common theme among Asian women who commit suicide. They want to be a burden to family. That's part of the cultural expectation for Asian women, is that, you endure hardship, endure bitterness. That's a virtue in a traditional Chinese or Asian society.
Andrew Lam, anything to add to that?
Well, I think in some sense there is a commonality between the young people who do kill themselves and the older women who do kill themselves. It's because both group, in general, when they contemplate suicide, have to do with the fact that their identity is in crisis. You know, the older women who lose their position or role within the hierarchical family, or the young people who think that they only fit in if they fulfill family expectation, and if both fell out of those traditional roles, then they have something of an identity crisis, which leads to isolation and depression.
Here's a comment or question, really, from our website, which says, I've had Asian American students tell me that, contrary to stereotypes, not all Asians are math and science whizzes. I'm sure you'd agree with that. But to do poorly at exams and studies is to dishonor the family, not only oneself. Is this culture still pervasive, she asks, even after numerous generations in the USA? Andrew?
I think if anything that survived any Asian community, even by second or third generation, is that expectation to move up in the world through the education route. That has been proven to be successful for so many group of immigrants to the United States. You know, you go from being raggedly poor to going to become middle class and professional through education. So even if you forget the language and you cannot read and write in Vietnamese or Chinese anymore, I think you still ingest the idea that scholarship is where you're going to excel in America.
Yes, I would agree with Andrew. Of course, with different generations, the Western acculturation deepens. But remember, most of the Asian adults here in this country are immigrants. Most of them are, because until the 1960s, in the early 1970s, most Chinese and Asians did not immigrate here in great numbers. So most of the adults, especially older people, are from China or Korea or Japan, Asia, and period. So the younger generation, like 20 or, you know, early something, they have a better chance of being like raised and acculturated. But the idea of family, the importance of family, is still very much strong in the majority of the Asian Americans.
You know, we have no shortage of Asian American listeners, and yet we're not getting any calls from Asian Americans right now on this topic, as we have in the past on so many other topics. Peter, do you have any theories as to why?
Yes. I mean, I'm not surprised at all. Asians do not express their view publicly. That's because of my work. You know, it's difficult for Asians to talk about feelings to strangers. I'll give you an example. We run a gambling and an alcohol recovery clinic for Asian, and we're the only, probably one of the few in the East Coast. And in New York City, there's not one single AANA or GA group for Asian speakers, not one.
Mm-hmm.
This is out of a population of, you know, probably over a million people.
And people probably, I'm guessing, feel conflicted because they hear us talking about suicide rates among some of their children, in effect, who are among the best and the brightest,
right?
These three who killed themselves at Caltech this summer being the spark for this segment, and then looking at the broader trend, and probably feeling conflicted and thinking, well, what am I supposed to do as a parent? Not encourage my kids to do well?
Also, the competition is so fierce now. I mean, I'm in California, and at Berkeley, you have to have at least 4.0 to get in, you know. So the competition is definitely there. The problem is, you know, since Asian make less than 5% of the country's population, but filled up 10 to 30% of the best colleges, there is also a collective pride, meaning that you know, we should be better, you know, should competing with our neighbors and so on. But the dark side of that is, of course, we don't know how to talk about failure. It's so easy to talk about, oh yes, you know, so and so got into Harvard, but how do you talk about, you know, so and so's son got depressed and you know, killed himself?
Right.
That's not part of the language.
Right, and the stigma of suicide is so severe that that's one of the battles that people don't talk about it. Asians do not want to talk about suicide. We have
whites don't talk about suicide. Blacks don't talk about suicide. Latinos don't talk about suicide.
Well, they talk about it to a larger extent than Asians, because I run similar forums to non-Asian groups. I mean, it's not something you want to talk about, but because the stigma is in mental illness or suicide, it's multiplied many folds with the Asian population than whites or Latinos or African Americans, because I work with different groups and the engagement process, the shame is much steeper. It's much deeper.
Peter Yi speaking. Andrew, hang on 1 second. Just want to identify you for people tuning in, because it's been a while. Peter Yi, president of the New York Coalition for Asian Mental Health, who was just speaking, and Andrew Lam, editor at New American Media and author of Perfume Dreams, Reflections on the Vietnamese Diaspora. And Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that Asian are less likely to disclose their personal problems. I think no one wants to talk about suicide, but other groups may be more articulate about how they feel about their problem, what kind of problem they have. Asian, there's a tendency, especially if you're an immigrant, to hold it in and to endure it, because I think it's somehow it's perceived by a lot of people as a test of endurance. But failure to articulate your problem can lead to serious mental illness, I think.
Tim, in Queens, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Tim.
Thank you for taking my call. Just want to make a general comment about what your guests are saying, that I generally agree. I was born in Hong Kong, raised here for 20-plus years. I'm in mid-30s now. And I consider myself first generation, because although I wasn't born here, first generation here in the States, being educated here through high school, college, and beyond. I even though I personally didn't fail any courses throughout my academic years, but nonetheless, I think there's a little bit of a tolerance over time where, as we all become quote-unquote Americanized, the failure that it's beyond the individual and to the entire family gets a little bit, diluted in some way. It's no longer that big of an impact because I think, being growing up here, we don't just focus on school. We do a lot of intramural sports. We do a lot of other things that parents tend to understand that it's not just school now. And there's a lot of pressure beyond just academics.
Andrew, want to weigh in? It's certainly a classic immigrant pattern where the second generation does not adhere to the traditional values as much as the first, sometimes to the great dismay of the parents.
Sure. I think those of us who manage to break away and think critically for ourselves and decide for ourselves escape the trap of shame, if you will. I think, though, there is another pressure for second or third generation is to actually find a path between your old culture and the new ones that you embrace and find a way to fit in. There are statistics that in fact show that Asian American women tend to contemplate suicide more the longer they live in the United States. So that's sort of, kind of surprising in a way. So there's much more needed to be learned and studied in all these areas, and there's still very few statistics out there.
Tim, anything else you want to add?
Sure. I was going to say, commenting on what the guest just mentioned, that I can't say much about suicide rates, but I do agree that what I personally struggle with nowadays is trying to make a mark in regards to breaking that stereotype, which, it's a stereotype for a reason. Generally, it's true, but not always. As you mentioned, Brian, that there are all these, like myself, American listeners, but they don't call in. And although they generally, again, speaking, don't share their feelings about whatever topics may be in discussion, I think they want to break that stereotype, and that we do have an opinion. We want to make a stance, and yet we try to be, culturally educated. We want to pay our respect to our parents and grandparents, but yet want to be as Americanized and be opinionated and be heard.
Yes, I think that's a good observation. And by the way, as soon as I said nobody was calling in, our lines filled right up. Happens every time. Tim, thank you very much. From our comments page, Carrie in Brooklyn asks, you're talking about Asian Americans and suicide, but that is quite broad. Is there a difference by country? And Andrew, again, your book is about the Vietnamese diaspora. Should we be saying Chinese? Should we be saying East Asians? What's most accurate here?
Well, what I find accurate in terms of what we're talking about, and especially in the piece that I wrote about, is East Asian, because they're all bound by the Confucian, ethos that came down several thousand years ago, and what my uncle crassly called the chopstick country that used chopsticks, like Japan, Korea, and Vietnam, and China, and so on. In Vietnam, there is a temple in Hanoi called the Temple of Literature, and that tells you how deeply Vietnamese worship education. It used to be a university in 1,000 years ago, and now it's the number one temple in Hanoi. people go there and pray for good grades. I think the emphasis of education is across board, but I think on the level of East Asian, there is almost something that is elevated to near religion, I think.
Marie in Morningside Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Yes, I wanted to just share some observations I had from my son, who was in one of the specialized high schools that had about a 70% Asian population. And we would hear from time to time in PTA meetings things that conveyed the kind of pressure that many of the Asian students were under. For instance, if someone was truant or missed school altogether, the PA had to wrestle with, do we call home because the child might get beaten? And then the Asian parents would say, oh, no, that doesn't happen. But this is the kind of thing that would come out in a PA executive board meeting, for instance.
Beaten, Peter Yee, is that disproportionate risk here?
Well, the thing is this. I mean, our comments are generalized comments. I think Andrew and I both immigrated here when we were children. We grew up here. But on my professional experience, a lot of Asian recent immigrants, they don't understand that in this country, you don't hit your kid. But in Asia, if you don't hit your kid, you're not showing them love and care. So that's still kind of true. So the more recent immigrants, especially from the more rural part of China, they still think, you know, they don't understand in the United States, you don't hit your kids. So that is some truth to it, especially if they're from the rural part of certain part of Asia. They still smack the kids around in China just a few years ago. So to come here, expect, you know, not to hit your kid, it's a cultural shift. So there's some truth to that. But, of course, if you were born here, your parents are educated here, that wouldn't be an issue.
And here is a South Asian who wants to weigh in, Jacob in Rockland. Hi, Jacob.
Hello, how are you doing?
Okay.
That I want to weigh in because I think a lot of the stress for the kids also comes from the competitions between families. It's a lot of, the families want to compare kids and will try to one-up each other, and that leads to stress and guilt feelings among the kids, always trying to do better for their parents. You know, I just recently left a well-paying job to pursue my MBA because, you know, that's what's expected of us and our family. So it's very hard to be a South Asian, especially from India, too.
Yes, I have a very interesting quick story to elaborate on this gentleman's point. A couple of years ago, we have a client coming into our clinic, and he wanted his 15-year-old to be tested for IQ. And IQ test is very expensive, it's not covered by insurance, and our psychologist did a test. So he talked to the parents, said, very good news, you know, your kid has slightly above average intelligence. And the parent got really upset that, I don't believe this, test him again.
Only slightly above average, right? Only.
And the reason why, and the psychologist became very confused. Oh, why do you want to do this? He said, well, my cousin in California, 16-year-old, just got to Stanford, and my kid's only getting B's. He must be mentally retarded. I want him to test it again. True story. So to elaborate the point, So that does happen. It may happen universally among Asian family households, but it does happen.
We're just about out of time. A couple of things real quick. Just to return to the fact that the deaths at Caltech, the three suicides this summer, were all men. But certainly there are many, many, many young Asian American women who are very high achievers, probably to the same extent as the males in the family at this point. Have there been cases of women documented? Or, Peter, why would this tend to occur among the men?
It's not true. The young Asian women is the highest, one of the highest risk group in the country. For the age. But the men, a couple of things. When men commit suicide, they usually do it by violent means, so they usually succeed. When women commit suicide, they do it more by passive means. So I think women attempt suicide much more than men, but men succeed more often because men might use gun or jump. Women would like to do passive, non-destructive way, probably pills or hanging. So,
and there is a post this week on the blog Racialicious, which covers topics of race and pop culture. And a woman comments, you don't need to see the studies. You know it in your bones, personally, not scientifically. Growing up in an Asian American family, there was no such thing as depression. Feeling blue always had something to do with you not trying hard enough. So is there an aspect, Andrew, of Asian American culture that makes it harder for women to express weakness?
I think so. I think not only do they have to do well just as their male counterpart in school, but there is also the conservative aspect of family values that is imposed on the women more than on the men. And in that case, you're getting the double edge of the pressure, not only to do well, but to keep family values uphold in some way. And I think that pressure can be very deleterious to one's sense of identity in America, especially on the private life. You're supposed to be conservative, but then in public life, you're supposed to be very individualistic and American, and a lot of people flounder in between.
So finally, in our last minute or so, what do you each recommend for parents listening right now? We all want our kids to work hard, and they do need some pressure. But how can parents gauge the level of pressure coming from their own culture or their own expectations and temper it so that it's at the right level? Is it easy to start this conversation, Peter?
It's difficult. I have teenage kid myself, so it's difficult. I think one has to, for Asian parent or any parent, you have to be consistent. Show that you care and try to show people good value. But there's a point, you know, and you know it, when you push too hard and the kid is not responding, it's a very, you have to sometimes just step back and say, what's important here? What you want or what the kid want, or is there somewhere in between? You have to be very reflective about this.
Andrew Lamb, anything to add real quick?
Well, I would not recommend parents, but I would talk to young people because I myself was a biochem major at Berkeley pre-med, and I broke my parents' heart and became a writer instead. And I never regret a moment of it. And my parents finally saw my way in time when I, you know, found a job. So I think young people need to be stronger than, you know, their parents' vision. They need to find vision of their own to say, I got to break out of this path and find my way.
Andrew Lamb, writer, is the author of Perfume Dreams, Reflections of the Vietnamese Diaspora. He's an editor at New America Media. Peter Yee is president of the New York Coalition for Asian Mental Health and assistant executive director of behavioral health services at Hamilton Madison House in Manhattan. Thank you very much for an important discussion.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we continue our coverage of the New York City public advocate race. City Councilman Eric Joya is up today. Stay tuned.